The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
This is our legal expert, Jeff O'Brien. He's a well-recognized attorney from Lohmann Abdo in such areas as business law, commercial contract disputes, intellectual property, and more. He also knows his sports and can lend his expertise when there are legal issues at play. This is Dave Harrigan, a well-recognized producer and update host from the Mackey and Judd Show. He's not really an expert in anything, but here he is to introduce the topics to Jeff and then nod in agreement every time Mr. O'Brien makes a great point. Welcome to Case in Point with Jeff O'Brien. Here's Dave Harrigan.
That's right. It is another episode of the Case in Point podcast. I'm Dave Harrigan. That is Jeff O'Brien from Lohmann Abdo Law Firm, downtown Minneapolis. And Jeff, as you said before we got going here just a moment ago, you're sick of having Badger quarterbacks in the studio. You brought Brooks Bollinger by for a couple of earlier episodes. So go for football. There's obviously plenty of news that's been going on the last several weeks. And you brought in one of the former Gopher greats to help us out.
We brought a subject matter expert here. Yeah, my good friend Ricky Foggy, who, you know, Gopher football quarterback legend here. So we're bringing balance to the force here. As I said, we have had Brooks in as a Badger quarterback. Now we've got Ricky here, and Ricky brings. We're calling this our Holiday Bowl edition. You know, the Gophers are going to play in a few hours out in San Diego against Washington State, and of course, nobody is talking about the actual game. Everybody is talking about what has transpired in the last several weeks with the university's investigation into what happened back in September at a party, an alleged sexual assault, some players being disciplined, being suspended, a short-lived boycott, and now out to San Diego for the game. And there's a lot of questions, I think, that are still out there. So I asked Ricky to come in and not only, you know, give his take as an alum, and I'm a former part of the program, but also Ricky has been a coach at the high school level, has mm-hmm. had to deal with turnarounds of programs that have had issues. He's a parent, and I thought it'd be good to get his perspective as to all of this stuff going on. So we're going to talk about some legal issues, but we'll also talk about some of the softer issues in this whole saga of the investigation, and then we'll close out with a few kind of practical takeaways as we always do. And the buzz, you know, if this episode was brought to you by any words, it would be the words due process. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Well, let's start. First of all, Ricky, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
What was kind of your first reaction? I mean, obviously the story came out, you know, several weeks, a couple months ago when we first had the first suspensions, a couple guys, you know, five guys missing a couple games here. I'm losing the word here.
Restraining order.
Restraining order. Yep. Yes, thank you. That kept them away from, literally away from TCF Bank Stadium, and now it all coming back with a report from the EOAA office. And what was your reaction first when you heard it all?
It was kind of shocking. I think that in this day and age, that I think that just people in general, you know, athletes and everybody involved, you know, that have to deal with the social media. It's still kind of making mistakes along the way. Mm-hmm. So it was shocking and somewhat surprising, because we felt at this point that the football program was, you know, getting back on track, going in the right direction. And so to have something come up to this extent was definitely disappointing.
Yeah. And Jeff, I mean, you can kind of take us through the timeline here of everything that went down and where we're at right now.
Yeah, let's walk through the timeline. So this all goes back to an incident that happened at a party on the university campus on September 2nd of this year. And there is a report. It's an 80-page report. I know KSTP has published it. I have a copy of it. It should be wrapped in a brown paper bag. It's pretty graphic.
Yes, it is.
You can get through a few pages, and then you just feel like you need to go take a shower. It's pretty gross what happened. But there's a question of whether there was a number of players involved with the young lady, and there's a question involved as to what kind of consent she gave for the activities that went on at that party. And the Hennepin County attorney investigated the matter and determined that there was insufficient admissible evidence to charge any of the players. Mm-hmm. Now, that the alleged victim, worked at TCF Bank Stadium.
Game operations.
Exactly. And she filed for restraining orders against four players that were initially investigated, plus two more. So there were six players total. And what happened is the six players were prevented from playing in the Rutgers game earlier this year because they couldn't be within in the same building with her. And, of course, if she's there working the game, then that would mean that they, you know, couldn't be there.
Yep.
And it was a little bit absurd, in my opinion, that obviously they're playing the game, that they would somehow come out of the field and have contact with her. I don't know what the circumstances of where she would be positioned in the stadium. But there was a settlement agreement reached as to the restraining orders, and they were subsequently dismissed. Players were able to finish out playing the rest of the home games at TCF Bank Stadium. And then on December 7th, we didn't hear about it for a while after that. December 7th, the university's Office of Equal Opportunity and Affirmative Action, the EOAA, concluded its investigation, sent a letter to each to 10 players and informed that they were going to be suspended from the team. Six of them were recommended for expulsion from the university, four for a one-year suspension. And this was they had completed their investigation into the incidents. So this is separate from the criminal investigation. This was investigation by the university as to potential violations of university policy and the student conduct code. Then, following those that announcement and the news story breaking as to the suspensions, the remaining players announced they were boycotting all football related activities mm-hmm. in support of their teammates, and were calling into question whether or not the Gophers were even going to be playing in the Holiday Bowl.
Which happens a few hours from when we're recording this
exactly.
right now.
Exactly. And this is where it really gets interesting. So Tracy Clays, the head coach, has his Twitter account and tweeted out support for the boycott. This was coming after Mark Coyle, the athletic director and the president of the university, Eric Kaler, indicated that he was aware of these punishments coming and was supportive of them. President Kaler met with the players subsequently, and the boycott was lifted. As we sit here today, the team's going to play tonight. Coach Clay's future is in the air, and the Hennepin County Attorney's Office is now reviewing the EOAA report. And one thing I should mention before we jump off and talk a little bit more, one of the questions is how did the Hennepin County Attorney not, or the Minneapolis Police not get any of this information? The university's student conduct code had a few provisions in it where they had a better authority to compel witnesses giving testimony. Mm-hmm. So the university report is actually more substantial than the Hennepin County Attorney report because it was easier for the university, for the EOAA, to gather information. So that's my guess as to why the county attorney's office is now looking at that report, because they have there's more witnesses talking in there, where I think there was only maybe say a half dozen or so, if that, giving testimony in the original investigation. So here's our big issues. We have the big question is what happens to Coach Clay's after tonight?
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of indicated that he thinks he might be out. There's been a lot of talk about that. There's been speculation. I know Mr. Royce did a column this weekend as to his choice for the replacement. So a lot of talk about what's going to happen. Everybody seems to kind of think it's a fait accompli that Tracy Clays is no longer going to be the head coach of the University of Minnesota football team. The other issue is what will the county attorney do once it reviews this report, and will it reverse its earlier decision? Will they find sufficient admissible evidence, to use their term, and press charges against anybody involved? And then the big question that we've talked about on the air with Phil and Judd, and which we'll talk about here again, is were these players afforded due process in the course of the university's investigation? And I think that's really critical. One thing I wanted, one of the reasons when I originally called Ricky last week and asked him if he would come in and talk about this, is I do want to get your take as a player, as part of a football team. I mean, the Gopher football team, you're a Division I school. It's a big program. It's a, you know, everybody loves that the football team. You played originally, you were recruited by Coach Holtz and played the first 2 years with Coach Holtz and then with Coach Gutekunst. What do the coaches, what is it like being on campus, being an athlete and being a student, and what do the coaches tell you about the, you know, carrying yourself when you, I mean, obviously there's parties, there's all the other stuff that's part of college life. what do the coaches instruct you as a player as to what to, as how to conduct yourself?
Well, I think that's a great question. You know, growing up in the early 80s and, you know, coming to a major university like the University of Minnesota, I'm originally from South Carolina, you know, a small town called Waterloo and a baby of nine kids. And so I was always taught to do the right thing by my parents. And I had to sit and watch my older siblings take a lot of blows for things they did wrong. So I learned early on not to do those things that they was doing. And so it kind of carried over. You know, I was recruited by John Palermo, and he was almost like a father figure, you know, because he knew I was going a long way from home. He knew I would be homesick. And so he kind of just took me on his wings. And another point I think is that we really didn't have a lot of free time during the season. You know, you got football practice, you got to go to school, you got to go back to practice in the afternoon, you got study hall at night. There's a real structured schedule that we had to go by on a daily basis. And then, you know, once the football season was over, you had your winter conditioning, and then you had a little bit more free time there. But, you know, I think the point that why we didn't get in any serious trouble is that we respected each other as football players. We respected our head coaches as father figures to us. And, you know, and they, if we didn't do the right thing, there was consequences that we had to pay, and nobody really wanted to pay those consequences or go in and have to have a one-on-one with Coach Host.
Yeah.
So I think they kind of laid the, put the fear of God in us and let us know this was going to be the consequences, and some of you'd be sent home. And so there's no way I was going back home to face my mom.
Sure.
So it's just the respect factor. I think the times today is a little different for the kids over there because of the social media. You get a lot of kids that come from the South and they get thrown into a community like the Twin Cities, and it's kind of above them. And so you got to have some kind of system to be able to integrate these kids into the city life. And so, and you know, when we was in college, we just stayed over in Dinkytown. You know, we never went downtown Minneapolis or downtown St. Paul because nobody had a car. So we kind of regulated ourselves to Dinkytown. And, you know, yeah, we went to parties and went to bars, and you had to walk home because we didn't have a car. So it's just different these days. I'm definitely glad that I was at the University of Minnesota in the 80s and not with this whole social media deal because, you know, now everybody's watching everything. So you have to be extra careful now. And I just think that being a student athlete is a privilege. And I think some of the kids are kind of getting away from that, seeing it more of as a right. But it's a privilege to be able to be granted a four-year scholarship at a Division I school. And I think that they just have to be able to realize it that way and conduct themselves accordingly.
You know, you brought up something, you know, with Coach Holt and with the Palermo that recruited you. You know, your situation and your teammates was not unlike what some of these kids have gone through in that you had a coaching change during your time at the university. The person that recruited you did not stay there. How does that affect you when you are now the guy that you're taking orders from or your coach is not the guy you came to play for? How does that change psychologically?
It didn't. I actually came in with the new regime.
Okay.
I came in, Coach Host's first year was actually 84, and that was my first year
right.
also.
Right, but then when he left, you had Coach Gutekunst took over the was it a similar thing? I mean, Gutekunst was his defensive coordinator, yep. Correct?
Yeah, so, it was similar because we all knew Coach Gutekunst. The only person left with Coach Host was Vinny Serrato, who was our recruiting coordinator. So our quarterback coach, everybody stayed in place. But just from the head coach standpoint, you go from Coach Host, who's a firecracker and a great motivator, and you go to Coach Gutekunst, who's also a really great coach, but just had more of a laid-back style of motivational speaking.
So it could even be just a personality difference mm-hmm. between. So, I mean, it yeah, and that's what I meant is similar. I mean, because you did – Coach Klaes's, of course, was defensive coordinator Coach Kill. A lot of these guys came to play for Coach Kill. So it is very much parallel, but it could be just as much, the personality could be just as much different, where they may have had the fear of God out of Jerry Kill, and now with Tracy Klaes, they may have had a different relationship with him, and he may be more, like you said, a little bit more laid back, like Coach Gutekunst. That could just be enough of a change to maybe kind of not say, you know, misfire, but it causes the players to have a different outlook on things being players there.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, though. I think the social media thing and the technology, the phones, the smartphones and everything has really changed, everything, including, how a Division I student athlete carries themselves.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how the university has reacted from the top down, from the president, Eric Kaler, AD Mark Coyle, to Tracy Klaes, head coach himself. We had the EOAA report. They had the suspensions, the boycott, everything. I want to get Jeff first, your opinion from the legal's perspective. I know the due process has really been something that's stuck in your craw. And then, Ricky, just as a former player, as somebody who's still close to the program, what you've seen from the leadership and what we've heard publicly, obviously after we've all seen the 80-page report, just general thoughts, where do you think it's landed as far as how the leadership has gone for the last couple of weeks?
Well, Dave, when we talk about the due process issues, and this is where it does bother me how it's been handled. And, what I tell people is, when you have a bad act or a crime or anything, it's not saying that you support or condone what happened if you're defending somebody who's accused. The point of due process under our Constitution is that even the most straightforward, when the most straightforward slam dunk criminal case or any kind of issue, the government or the prosecution needs to prove their case.
Sure.
And we're dealing here, we're separate from the criminal side, but now we're talking with the university, and the University of Minnesota is a public university. And, we have the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is the Due Process Clause. And by virtue of the 14th Amendment, it's imposed upon the states. And there's been court cases that have subsequently been decided that have consistently held that a student at a public educational institution, whether it be elementary school, high school, middle school, college, it's a public institution, they cannot be deprived of their right to an education without due process. Part of this is the suspension from the football team. The other piece of this is 6 of them have been recommended for expulsion, 4 of them are recommended for suspension for a year from the university itself, okay? So no matter how bad how gross the allegations are in the report is, the 80-page report, there was an investigation, a determination as to punishment by at least the president and the athletic director. And there's some that, and apparently also possibly the head football coach.
Mm-hmm.
Those players then are now given the right to appeal. My understanding is those players, there was never a hearing in front of, say, the Board of Regents or whomever, and a chance for those players to say, no, I wasn't there. My understanding is one of the players involved, Anton Winfield Jr., may or may not have even been at the party. He was picked out of a lineup, and it might have been erroneously, okay? So in my opinion, the university erred. If their process is to do it this way, their process should afford a hearing before the punishment is imposed. I mean, I go to hearings in recent weeks. I've been in front of city councils in 2 different cities. And before the city just makes its ruling on whatever is recommended as an order, one case it was a real estate matter, one case it was a liquor license issue, we have the right to request a public hearing and be heard in front of the city council. As a public university, that, in my opinion, that should have happened.
Mm-hmm.
These young men should have been given a hearing prior. And if the university wants to hear, take the hearing, hear their side, and impose the punishment afterward, that's their choice. But they heard then. But at least those young men had a chance, and their attorney would have a chance to respond to the allegations against them before the university imposed the punishment, and then they still would have appeal rights afterwards.
Sure. And Ricky, your thoughts just on the leadership top down, what you've seen publicly or heard perhaps not so publicly?
Yeah, it's been kind of weird because I haven't really heard anything concrete. They came out about the whole protest deal, and And what that does is just kind of put current players in a flux. You know, I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen, you know, after the bowl game tonight. So I just think we're all in a holding pad. And, you know, and hopefully this week we can get some straightforward answers. And but for me right now, I'm got my hands in the air. I'm just waiting to hear at least something good or concrete to go by.
Yeah, and it's been a lot of privacy laws have taken over, you know, both Mark Coyle, the AD, and the president, Eric Kaler, have said, look, there's only so much we can say. And that's certainly true. They obviously can't get into a lot of it. But if you're in Mark Coyle's shoes right now, and I'll throw to both of you, Tracy Clays can't be your coach next year, right? I mean, being that you're the new AD, and it seems like everybody coming in as an AD, you want your guy. You want to be able to make your mark on a program, and football's the biggest program you can make a mark on, right?
I was just going to say that, Dave, that I think that's right. I think every athletic director wants to bring in their coaches. And I do think in some ways they do look for the opportunity to make a move and bring in their coaches. I don't remember how much they're paying Coach Clays, but
the buyout is not large. I think $500,000.
Right. So And if you know, we've talked on this show before about Jay Robinson's employment contract when they made a move on him and terminated him. If you know, Coach Clays may have, you know, for cause termination provisions in his employment contract as well. I'm guessing he does. Mm-hmm. And they make a determination that there is sufficient cause to terminate him. In that case, they may even find a way to argue that they aren't entitled to pay, that they aren't required to pay him a buyout. So I do think that, and I think it's not so much the underlying, what happened on September 2nd, and even the boycott that would motivate Mark Coyle to terminate Coach Clays. I think it is the coach tweeting the support to his players of his players on the boycott was essentially thumbing his nose at the administration. And sure. I think at that point, I think Coyle almost has to. I mean, he's got all these other programs that he oversees. I think this is his early chance to assert his authority. And I do think that act would prompt him to make a change.
Yeah, Ricky.
The question is, of course, who do they get? But I think he's going to make a change.
Yeah, and Ricky, you played for a coach. We've talked about Lou Holtz. I believe firecracker was the word you used. I think that's the nice way of putting it. Tracy Clay is a little bit different in his mindset. He's soft-spoken. He's, you know, much more laid back. What's your thoughts on him moving forward?
I think it'll be interesting because let's just say if he wins tonight and his overall record goes to 9-4,
it's a good mark.
It's a good mark for a first-year head coach, and that's the thing about Coyle. We haven't heard anything about what he's been doing, and so that's been the difficult part. And I don't know. He's just been there. And so we've been looking for him to come out and be more assertive. And so I think today is a big day for the Gopher football program. I think a lot of questions got to be answered after today. You know, I'm pulling for the Gophers for sure. And so it'll be interesting to see if Coach Clays get the 9-4 tonight. It'll be interesting to see if Coyle will pull the plug on him. But like Jeff says, if this is the opportunity for him to do it, if he's willing or if he even has another person in mind to run this program. But this is going to be his first big decision to make on our football program. And so I think a lot of people was interested to see what he does.
Well, and if you're going to make a change, you're already kind of late in the process, right? I mean, a lot of if you're going to fire a lot of coaches – or a coach in college, a lot of it comes before bowl season even begins. So, I mean, you have some big fish out there, Charlie Strong, Les Miles, some others, but you're already kind of putting yourself behind the eight ball a little bit, aren't you?
Yeah, there's no question because recruiting goes year long,
yeah,
year round. So kids want to know if their coaches are going to be there. And so, like you said, right now, kids are already making decisions where they want to go to school. And so whether you get rid of Clays, or if he doesn't, he's got to make that decision within the next couple of days.
All right. Before we wrap up here, Jeff, I know you wanted to get some of the practical takeaways here as far as due process, taking some care in hiring. What are some of the practical lessons we can learn here?
Yeah, and before we get to that, I have one more question for Ricky. You know, I want to put your coach hat on here. Let's assume win or lose tonight, let's say that Coyle does make a move and Tracy Claes is no longer the head coach there, and let's say that that Coyle picks up the phone and says, Ricky, I want you. Let's say you're the new head coach. You walk into this situation.
I think he likes that idea. Yeah, that's so, not so bad.
We'll link your cell phone number on the podcast so that Mark Coyle can get to you. But you step into this. What is a coach? You know, you've had a history of turning around programs, and I know I've heard you say the words changing the culture. How do you walk into this mess and change the culture?
Oh, it'll be difficult. There's no question about it. But the one thing is that, you know, something's got to be cleaned up. And so you got to go in and what I did as a high school coach, I went in and I sat down with each and every player. Kept all the parents out because, you know, it get a little muddy with the parents.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
So I sit down and I talk to each and every player and ask them what's been the problem. And they're kids, and they'll tell you. And so that's the first thing you got to figure out. What's the major problem? And you got to just change it. And change isn't easy. There's no question. But like I always tell kids that I coached and I tell parents, kids are kids. You know, and if you're doing things the right way and you're doing the things that with their best interest in mind, they'll do whatever you ask them to do because they don't know anything better. They're kids. And so they need a guy. If they do make a change, he's got to be headstrong. He's got to have a great, solid program, which I think Coach Keel had because he was starting to put more players into the NFL, and that's what players want to do these days. Mm-hmm. So you got to make it appealing. And it's got to make it fun, and you got to get the students back into the program. And that's one of the things Coach Host did. He got the students back in, and everybody started having a great time, and we started winning some football games. So you got to be appealing. You got to have an offense and a defense that are exciting for these kids, and then they'll come up and they'll play for you.
Jeff, let's take it away here with some of the practical
stuff. Our takeaways here. So we're talking about due process, and you know, due process applies when you're dealing with, you know, state institutions, federal, state, city, educational institutions, the public schools, including universities. But also when you're dealing with, if you're for the business owners that listen, you know, if you have employees, you know, some of the, you know, there's employment laws out there. You have to, you know, same kind of thing in terms of a process that has to be followed sometimes. So for business owners, make sure that when you're dealing with your employees, you know, document things as they happen, have personnel files, have an employee handbook with your policies, just like we're dealing here with violations of university policy and a student code of conduct. We're not talking about a statute or an ordinance out there. We're talking about university policy.
Sure.
Same thing with employers. And then also we get back to, you know, the hiring of Coach Claes. You know, do take care in hiring. I mean, the circumstances that led to him, there was definitely reasons why Tracy Claes became the head football coach in the wake of Jerry Kill's resignation. You know, there was a desire to, you know, kind of keep a consistent process. That staff had been, it was always talked about, the staff had been together for years. And then, of course, first thing he did was fire Matt Limegrover. And you know, the desire to try to keep the recruits. They didn't have there was an interim athletic director at the time, because Norwood Teague had resigned. So you had kind of this perfect storm of circumstances where they just decided. As my understanding is, they decided on one candidate who wanted the job. They didn't go talk to anybody else. And I think that's a good lesson here. Is you know, I always, when I advise clients, when I refer them to other professionals or other advisors to help them with things, I call it my rule of three. I always like to give them three names. I don't like to just say contact this person. Let them make a decision. I think that one of the things is, you know, interview as many people as you think as needed to determine that you have your best person. You may decide that the first person you talk to is the best person, but interview a couple more and decide and have that confirmed. So I think that's kind of the lesson here too, is just, no matter what the situation, take care in who you're bringing in for a position, because you never know what – you may not have the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that those are kind of the practical takeaways here. But, you know, I really do hope that the Gophers win tonight, and I hope that we can get – that the program gets back on track. And this is just – you know, it gets put in the rearview mirror as quickly as possible, and we can move on. I mean, nobody likes to see the University of Minnesota football program dealing with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this goes beyond wins and losses on the football field. We can deal with that, but this is, you know, my dad's an alum too, and I know that this bothers alums to see this stuff going on at their school. And I hope that we turn this around quickly and get back to winning football games.
That's right. Clean it up and get back to winning. That would be good. Well, that's another episode of Case in Point. First of all, Ricky, thank you very much for joining us. Great having you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right. Dave Harrigan, Jeff O'Brien, of course, of Lohman Abdo with you each time we do a little Case in Point podcast. You can find us, as always, 1500ESPN.com. Podcast one, iTunes. Give us that 5-star rating. We would appreciate it. And Jeff?
The Facebook page.
You got it. Facebook Case in Point Podcast. And we'll do it again in a couple weeks. Thanks, guys.
Good. See you next year.
Thank you.